Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Ballot question two is the most expensively fought voter referendum in Massachusetts history. Proponents and opponents of efforts to lift the cap on charter schools in the state have already raised an astonishing $33 million. Again, all just for question two. That's more than the $30 million spent on all ballot questions back in 2014. Now, we have been working our way down the list of the biggest donors on both sides, requesting interviews with as many of them as possible. Groups opposed to question two have raised more than $12 million so far, 99% of which has come from various teachers' unions led by the Massachusetts Teachers Association. We hope to sit down with them later this week. The Yes on Two campaign has raised more than $21 million, and more than 75% of that money has come from five nonprofits, the largest of which is New York-based Families for Excellent Schools, which does not have to disclose its donors. They have declined our interview requests. Other major donors who declined our requests or did not return calls include former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Ray Stata of Stata Venture Partners, Ed Shapiro of Par Capital Management, and hedge fund manager Seth Klarman. However, one major donor did sit down with us, Chuck Longfield. He donated $100,000 in support of question two, and this morning he told us why. Longfield is a successful entrepreneur who also once taught high school math at a suburban public school. Over the last 30 years, he's also given more than $1 million to Boston public schools for tutoring, professional development, and classroom technology. And Longfield says his passion for education stems from his own childhood, growing up in East Boston.
My parents didn't have a whole lot of money, but they really cared about education. They, when I was young, sent me to the Boston public schools. I went to my neighborhood school, the Samuel Adams, and after that, I was fortunate enough to go to Boston Latin School, and that was a launching pad to go to Harvard, pretty nice life after that. But I grew up with an awful lot of kids in my neighborhood that weren't as fortunate. Some of them had enough money to go to parochial school, but the ones that went to public school went to East Boston High. East Boston High back then wasn't very good, had a very high dropout rate, and most of the kids that I grew up with did drop out of high school.
Now, so, and when you say back then, are we talking about the
late 60s, early
70s? 70s.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So you've had a whole variety and depth of experience sort of in different areas of public education. You've donated, what, over $1 million to Boston public schools in a variety of capacities. Of course, as you know, BPS is opposed to question two. So what prompted you to donate the $100,000 in support of question two?
Yeah. So actually, to clarify, Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston, actually is in support of charter schools. He just wants slightly fewer charter schools than the ballot initiative would create.
I mean, just to say, the mayor's been on our show, and he said roughly what you said, that he's definitely in support of charter schools, but he's deeply concerned about the financing question. He thinks it would be disastrous for the city of Boston.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of political pressure that are placed on people, but the real issue are those children. I have been in many Boston public schools, and I've been in many charter schools, and I just watch what they do. I mean, the charter schools have extraordinary staffs and business practices and such, and the kids do well as a result. Not only is that great for charter schools that the kids do well, but it also then puts pressure on the public schools that says, well, maybe we should start emulating some of these practices because they're good practices.
So why do you think it's better to expand the number of charter schools? And I mean, I'm so grateful that you came in to talk with us, because you're one of the few people who is definitely putting your money where your mouth is and are also willing to talk about it. Why do you think it's better to do that than to, say, continue the philanthropy that you've done already for Boston Public Schools and nudge BPS as a whole that way?
They're not mutually exclusive. You should do both of them.
Do you have other examples of things that charter schools, in your opinion, do better that should be cause for more change in public schools as a whole?
Well, yeah. So one is an example is that The Brook Charter School, which is an extraordinary set of charter schools in Boston, does intense professional development for teachers. Teachers get upwards of 200 hours a year of professional development. In a typical public school, you get very few hours of professional development. And in general, it's not really all that good. The only way they get that much professional development is by having a longer school day. You know, so if you have three more hours of school a day, kids have time for art and music and other things, but teachers also have time for professional development. When you're trying to cram everything into, you know, 5-6 hours a day, there isn't enough time to instruct children, nor is there enough time to help teachers.
Mm. What do you think are the primary obstacles to introducing these kinds of changes in a place like the Boston Public Schools?
Well, at the end of the day, everything is sort of collectively bargained in the public schools, and I would say in general, the central administrations aren't always strong enough, you know, to be the other side of the collective bargaining agreements, and so I think it just is hard sometimes.
So, put another way, you're saying unions are.
Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of impediments to get in the way, but. Like I said, I spend a lot of time and money in the Boston Public Schools. I'm big fans, and I want them to work. But it's going to take time for that. The change comes slowly. But until that happens in Boston, generations of kids are going to those 70 level 3 and level 4 schools.
So I'm curious what you think about this. Over the past several weeks, my mind has sort of been wondering about the unintended consequences of a question like ballot question two. And bear with me a second because I'm going to be thinking out loud here. In the conversation you and I are having and in the conversations I've had with virtually everyone I've talked to about question two, for all the right reasons, the center of the discussion tends to be around places like Boston and Springfield, Lawrence, sort of the larger urban centers where the demand for charter schools is the highest. And now, as we see in this last couple of weeks, and now the last week before the actual election day, there's a lot of focus in terms of what are suburban voters going to do about question two. And then there's even like an ad campaign, right, in support of question two that's talking directly to suburban voters and saying, you wouldn't let your kids go to a failing school. Don't let the same thing happen to urban children. And I'm just curious. It makes me wonder. It's starting to feel like we've ended up in a situation where we have, in very sharp relief, the suburban-urban divide in education in Massachusetts. But we almost have this equally unfair situation where suburban voters could be determining the outcome that matters most to urban voters. So in that case, I'm just wondering, I mean, should question two even have ever been put to a statewide vote at all?
No. Well, you're raising an excellent issue. So, you know, if you look at the urban voters, the people in Boston, Lawrence and Lowell, they want more charter schools, right? And opponents were very smart to say, well, if they voted for it, they'd get more charter schools. And we don't particularly want them to get more charter schools. And so the voters that needed to vote against question two, in a sense, needed to be suburban voters. But suburban voters are not really affected by this ballot initiative. And it's almost, in a sense, why are they dictating it? But we're also a pretty caring society. And so what I'm hoping is that, and which I've started to happen, and I have a lot of friends in the W suburbs, is that people now are starting to email each other that they've looked into the issue and that many of the things that were said aren't really quite true. And you're right. At the end of the day, those suburban voters might actually determine whether some poor family in Boston gets to go to a charter school.
I mean, isn't that fundamentally unfair?
It is fundamentally unfair. But it is what's happening with this vote. And so it is actually important that suburban voters sort of look, you know, sort of to the greater good and say, shouldn't we then just do some things that allow a few more families in Boston to get a decent education, at least until the public schools raise their game?
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm hoping.
I see what you're saying. But in a way, it makes me even that much more perplexed why its proponents of question two obviously did all the hard work, the legwork to get it on the ballot in the first place, knowing full well that by definition, it's going to be a statewide vote. I just wonder why, you know, last year, 2 years ago, there seemed to be this collective decision to not keep pushing for some kind of legislative solution
Yes.
for Boston, Springfield, Yes. Lawrence Lowell.
No, I also follow that very closely. Yeah. And the legislature actually is deadlocked right now because the House of Representatives wanted to pass legislation for more charter schools.
Right.
The governor wanted to pass legislation for more charter
there
schools.
There was a legislative compromise in the works.
Yes.
But
it
failed.
It was horrible. It basically said, you can have more charter schools if we do all these evil things to you. But the Senate was not forthcoming with a decent proposal. And so there was no way the House then could reconcile that proposal. But you're right. It should have been a legislative proposal. It's incredulous that we might vote against it now.
I mean, I asked that question, and I'm grateful that you engage with me on it because I am concerned about the long-term effects of this battle.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's been a lot of very passionate, heated rhetoric coming from both sides. And part of the way that we see that is, in the financing of question two, on the no side, 99.9% of the financing is from three or four teachers' unions. On the yes side, an equally vast portion of the financing is coming from out of state, from places that we can't even figure out who the donors are because they don't have to disclose, and from also out of state, extremely wealthy individuals who, again, because they won't say yes to our request for interviews, we can't understand what their actual interest in education is. So, I mean, that's another part of the picture here, which I think is giving a lot of voters pause, and they're just not quite sure what to do because they're not sure who to trust.
Yeah. I don't understand completely the laws that make some nonprofits disclose their donors and some nonprofits not disclose them. I'm proud of, my donation. But there's, on one side, $15 million is being spent by the teachers' union. On the other side are poor children in Boston and families in Boston. They don't have $15 million to fight this. I mean,
well,
really,
but the yes on two people have spent $20 million.
$20 million, yes.
So someone's spending money for them.
I was going to highlight that. So the families that are directly affected by this, they don't have any money to spend. So other people are funding this. I know many of those people that are funding it that have backgrounds similar to mine. In fact, some of my closest friends, one of them has that's helping with this, has a son who's a principal in the Boston Public Schools. He's helping create more charter schools. And several of them tutor every week in the Boston Public Schools. And so I'll draw the analogy to Mike Bloomberg, who just a week ago gave $50 million to Museum of Science.
Who's also given, $250,000 to Yes on Two.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so he's one of those evil New York out-of-staters who has funded the Yes ballot initiative. He grew up in Medford. He got great education at the Museum of Science. From my perspective, I welcome that he's helping to try to increase the number of charter schools.
If I may ask, do you really think that teachers' unions are standing on the opposite side from students, that they're opposed to the interests of—
No.
But that's what you said. You said on one side you have the teachers' unions, on the other side you have
On the one side of this expansion of ballot initiative, ballot initiative. And so, yes, is the teachers' union against the expansion of more charter schools? I think that's been answered. They are absolutely against the expansion of more charter schools. And we've never had an issue that has really divided us like this. Teachers go into teaching for the noblest of reasons. I went into teaching, my wife went into teaching for those reasons, and virtually everybody does. But we happen to have a situation right now where we have a group on the other side of the expansion of schools that for the most part do a good job with children who desperately need that.
What do you think the overall effect of question two could have on the state?
If the ballot initiative loses, I think that many of the reforms that charter schools have shown that work will be slower to be adopted in the traditional public schools. And if it passes, I think there will be a slow expansion of charter schools in places like Boston until the demand is met. Right now, 10,000 families are on waiting lists in Boston. And I believe that the public schools will get better faster because of that. If the traditional public schools were all good, I wouldn't be advocating for charter schools. It's a great innovation. It just seems incredulous why we wouldn't just keep growing it in limited ways until all the schools are good.
Well, Chuck Longfield is the founder of several tech firms. He's now chief scientist at Blackbaud, a company that develops software and services for the nonprofit sector. He has donated $100,000 in support of Question 2. Chuck Longfield, thank you so very much for coming in and talking with us.
No, thank you, Meg. It's been enjoyable, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you.
Yeah.
And that's one perspective from a major financial supporter of Question 2. As we mentioned, we've been requesting interviews with the biggest donors on both sides of Question 2, and we're hoping to sit down with its biggest opponent, Massachusetts Teachers Association President Barbara Mataloni, later this week. Next week, we'll also talk to parents with differing views on charter schools. And this question is so vitally important. We always want to hear from you. Tweet us at Radio Boston, comment at our website, radioboston.org, and most importantly, of course, vote on or before November 8th. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.